This is episode 322 of the Prepper Website Podcast, where I connect you with resources that will help you live a more self-reliant life so you can love your people, get prepared, and live free. Today's articles are Nuclear Attack Preparation from A to Z and 5 Discreet Weapons You Can Carry Almost Anywhere. Hey, I'm Todd Sepulveda, the editor of PrepperWebsite.com. This podcast is an audible version with some commentary of articles that have been posted on Prepper Website, a daily curation of preparedness information. These articles are some of the best of the best that have been recently posted on PrepperWebsite.com. All article links and show information can be found on the PrepperWebsitePodcast.com. Hey, before we get started, I want to let you know that this episode is sponsored by my new ebook, The Preparedness Community's Guide to a Microbiz and Increasing Your Finances. I truly believe that multiple streams of income is the key to getting prepared, paying down debt, and building an emergency fund. If you want to find out more information, go to microbiz.biz or come over to the PrepperWebsitePodcast.com and you can find out some more information there. Hey, I also want to let you know that if you are in the market for some long-term dehydrated food, Legacy Food is running one of the best deals that they have in their company's history. I'm an affiliate for them. I do believe in their food. I do think it's one of the best deals out there. And so if you're interested in it, if you're in the market for it, go take a look. I have links in the show notes. You can go straight over there. And there is a coupon code for 20% off. They have a bunch of different options over there. So highly recommend them. All right, so let's go ahead and jump into our first article. It comes to us from modernsurvivalonline.com. And the title is Nuclear Attack Preparation from A to Z. So let's go ahead and start reading. You curse moving out of the city for the umpteenth time. Rush hour traffic has turned your comparatively short 12-mile commute home into a snail's pace exercise in patience. You wait for your turn to move forward another few feet toward the interstate ramp, phone in hand, scrolling mindlessly through your social media notifications when suddenly it makes a new shrill chime. It doesn't stop. The catchy tune on the radio is slashed abruptly by an equally ominous tone. You tap the flashing banner on your phone. Suddenly, everything feels very far away and very unreal. The message reads, ballistic missile threat inbound. Seek cover immediately. You look around to the other cars. Almost every driver wears the same terrified face. Heads bent down at phones or staring mutely at the radio. Then the panic starts. Nuclear attack preparation is once again climbing the ranks of plausible threats for preppers. Out of the dustbin of history from Cold War era mutually assured destruction policies between superpowers today, with the two real brinkmanship occurring between the United States and rogue, progressively nuclear-armed dictatorships like North Korea. With the rise and fall of various regimes and nuclear material being more accessible than ever, there is also the plausible, even probable, possibility of a terrorist group detonating a smaller nuclear device or dirty bomb in a major population area. Unleashing the power of a star upon activation, even the smallest strategic nuclear weapons possess stupefyingly destructive capability. Blast wave and heat effects produce devastation and casualties miles beyond the epicenter of the blast. Assuming one is not killed or mortally wounded by either, then there is the simultaneous release of hard gamma radiation that can easily kill in hours or weeks, or if not gravely debilitate a victim, leading to a life ridden with cancer and disease. Even this is followed by the irradiated soot, dust, and other particulates that will settle back to Earth in the minutes and hours after the blast. The iconic black soot of nuclear fallout, which presents a significant threat to life for months afterward, hampering reoccupation and society in the aftermath. Considering that the nuclear warhead is the mankind's ultimate and terrible total weapon, you may think that surviving the use of one may boil down to mere chance. Hope and pray that it isn't aimed your way. This is not the case. While survival anywhere near the epicenter of the detonation will be virtually impossible if one is not far underground in a specialty bunker or shelter, anything short of such misfortune is survivable if you have warning, react quickly, and keep the appropriate sustainment supplies with you or prepared in advance. You and your loved ones can survive both the detonation and resultant fallout with no or minimal ill effects. Most of the supplies and preps we will discuss, you will be plenty familiar with. there are a few specialty items that are desirable to preparing for and surviving in the aftermath of a nuclear strike. Note that this article is a guide on surviving a nuclear strike as a single incident or limited exchange, not a proper nuclear war or end of world as we know it cataclysm. The information shared is not conjecture and has been gathered from authorities in nuclear preparedness at the height of government and academic levels. Many readers will already have the fundamentals of such a plan in place and will only need to make a few adaptations to their existing plans to facilitate survival of a nuclear strike. Others may be brand new beginners, and if so, will see that the techniques, equipment, and procedures listed will help to prepare one for a multitude of disasters and crisis scenarios of far lesser magnitude than a dreaded nuke. This article will cover the first, second, and third order effects of a nuclear detonation, but will not be a detailed analysis of the various kinds of such weapons, as for our purposes, only the yield of the warhead will make any practical difference in the outcome of the event. Some devices, so-called dirty bombs, do not produce much in the way of blast compared to a nuclear detonation, and are in fact not a proper nuclear warhead, but instead are designed to scatter as much radiological material as possible far and wide, hampering cleanup and rescue efforts in the aftermath of a conventional bomb. These devices will be touched on briefly only because dealing with their irradiating fallout is much the same as dealing with the fallout resulting from a nuclear detonation. So, nuclear weapon basics, what are we dealing with? Nuclear warheads come in a couple of basic varieties, fission and fusion. Fission, commonly called A-bombs, are the original, simpler, and still widely used type of atomic weapon. Fusion, or H-bombs, are thermonuclear bombs, are more common in the arsenals of nations with large and advanced nuclear arsenals, and are typically more powerful and far more complex than their fission cousins. For our purposes, both produce the dreadful effects that we will be preparing to defend against, and it will make no difference which one is heading your way. The power of a nuclear warhead is measured in yield, typically expressed in the equivalent weight of TNT detonated, either in kilotons, thousands of tons, or megatons, millions of tons. The higher the yield, the greater the destructive effect will be. The primary destructive effects of a nuclear detonation are blast, flash, ionizing, radiation, and fallout. A larger warhead will result in a larger radius of complete destruction at the hypocenter of detonation and a correspondingly larger radius of severe damage. The blast is a shockwave created by the intense heat and radiation forcing gas outward from the detonation site and compressing the surrounding air. It is this shockwave that causes much of the widespread destruction associated with a nuclear bomb. Any building short of specialty blast-resistant structures will be severely damaged or destroyed depending on their proximity to the detonation up to several miles away. Human beings are subjected to severe overpressure effects in tissues or are torn apart by the blast wind itself. Anything near ground zero, that is above or slightly below ground, will be completely annihilated. The flash or thermal radiation is emitted on detonation in visible and invisible spectrums. This is the predominant cause of both burns and eye injuries and will occur far outside the blast range. This thermal radiation is absorbed, transmitted, or deflected upon striking an object and raises the object's temperature accordingly. This can result in the charring and scorching of flammable material. This intense heat is enough to start fires initially, but these are often quickly snuffed out by the approaching blast wave. The initial flash can cause temporary blindness by overloading the amount of light that the human retina can handle. Permanent injury to the eye by retinal scarring can be caused by having the fireball of the detonation in the field of view. The height of the burst and size of the fireball will have a determining effect on permanent eye injury. Ionizing radiation is released in multiple forms, some moving at up to the speed of light. The principal types we are concerned with during and after the detonation are alpha and beta particles, neutrons, and gamma ray radiation. Alpha particles are dangerous if ingested or inhaled. Beta particles can penetrate living tissue, causing molecular damage and if the molecules is DNA, mutation, or cancer. Gamma rays are high energy and long range compared to other radiation and deeply penetrating, causing damage at the cellular level. Neutron radiation will render surrounding matter radioactive, including the fine dust and debris that collectively is nuclear fallout. A lower dose of ionizing radiation will produce sickness or long-term health risk, like cancer or genetic damage, while higher doses will cause acute sicknesses, tissue damage, and death in hours or weeks. Nuclear fallout is any matter that has been rendered radioactive from the emitted radiation of the nuclear device. This fallout will settle back to Earth after being lifted high into the atmosphere by the explosion and can sometimes be carried many miles away by prevailing winds and air currents. It forms the primary hazard for days, weeks, or months afterwards, depending on the device, and can adhere to skin, hair, clothing, and shoes, being tracked around like dust or mud, including into previously uncontaminated areas. Any exposure or ingestion of fallout will result in exposure to radiation, with the effects accruing depending on the dosage of radiation. Nuclear weapons also generate a secondary effect, an electromagnetic pulse or EMP. This EMP is not harmful to tissue but will damage or destroy any unshielded electronics exposed to it and disrupt radio communication. Semiconductors and integrated circuits are especially vulnerable to EMP effects. This will result in communications difficulty at the least following a nuclear detonation. While it paints a grim picture, understanding the destructive mechanisms of a nuclear warhead will allow you to better plan against it. So, preparation. Material preparation should concentrate on water, food, medical and trauma supplies, flashlights and batteries, and redundant backup copies of all important personal and legal documents, including physical copies of all important phone numbers. General guidelines below. Food, high-calorie, energy-dense, shelf-stable products, either canned or bagged, minimal prep required is a plus. Do not forget pet food if you have a pet. Water. A good guideline is 1 gallon per person per day. Expect to shelter in place immediately after an event for at least 72 hours and probably longer. Medical. A basic first aid kit and additional trauma supplies. Add somewhat more preference for additional burn treatments. Include potassium iodide pills. These pills stop uptake of radioactive iodide by the thyroid gland and are effective at preventing thyroid cancer. These are a preventative, not a cure. Do not forget any critical medication. If refrigeration is required, you must have provisions in place for a cooler or ice chest. Protective gear. Disposable gloves and dust masks or respirators of appropriate rating. Flashlights. Stock plenty of batteries. Expect total loss of power for the foreseeable future. Emergency crank radio. This type of radio is expected to survive the effects of an EMP. Will be crucial to tune into instructions from responding agencies about severity of aftermath and safety procedures, and does not rely on batteries. Note that radio communications may be atmospherically disrupted after a blast, or equipment may be damaged or destroyed far from ground zero due to the EMP effect. Clothes. A change of clothes can allow you to ditch contaminated clothes for a fresh pair. Documents. Anything that you do own that survives the blast may be unrecoverable due to fallout contamination. Have copies of everything important on a flash drive and on paper as a backup. Expect that you will be able to retrieve nothing from anywhere else. Items to include are things like social security cards, driver's license, car titles, deeds, birth certificates, diplomas and degrees, emergency numbers, and other phone contacts. And sanitation. If stashing supplies in a known location, 5-gallon buckets with lid, heavy contractor bags, sawdust or quick lime, feminine hygiene products, toilet paper, wet wipes, and powder. Keep a general readiness kit with you at all times. You may have a window of opportunity to seek shelter if warned of an impending strike early enough. A bob or inch kit should be in every one of your vehicles. If you have to take shelter hastily, the contents of either could be all that you have for several days. Advanced prep work should focus on identifying shelter and cover locations around places you frequent in your town or city like home, school, work, etc., or installing shelter locations at home or work, resources and time permitting. Pay attention to your surroundings while you commute. Remember, mass attenuates radiation. More mass between yourself and the fallout is best. There may be an adequate structure to protect you every few blocks. Any building, especially one with a basement, is better than being in your vehicle or in the open. If resources permit, you may wish to install a subterranean shelter in your home or on your property. Consider your locale. Major population centers will be priority targets in a nuclear exchange, as will military bases, defense industry manufacturing centers, and certain infrastructure hubs. If you live in or near one of these locations, you will need to be doubly prepared to act quickly in order to survive. Understand that a larger weapon detonating in close proximity is considered non-survivable. If that is a risk you are not willing to take, you must consider moving. The government rates the suitability of a room in a structure to protect occupants from a nuclear radiation with a rating known as protection factor. The ideal shelter location is one in a large concrete building, either at the center of the structure or an underground room with no exterior subsurface access points. Structures made from concrete or brick are best. Wood or light metal structures offer very little protection from radiation. Vehicles offer little to no protection from radiation. See the following diagram for details. And so there's a nice little diagram here that shows you and has numbers as far as protection levels, where you are. So attack imminent pre-detonation. If you are warned of an imminent strike in your area, you may have only a few minutes to seek shelter, but these few minutes are sufficient to save your life. Get inside the nearest structure, taking all family members and pets with you. Heavier, stronger materials are desirable. Such a building with a basement or multiple sublevels is best. Move away from windows. Do not look for any flash or cloud. You'll know it when it happens, and the flash can temporarily or permanently blind you. If you are trapped outside when a detonation occurs, take cover behind any large, heavy object between you and the blast, or get below surface level if possible. Lie flat and cover your head and face. After the shockwave passes, you must find the closest, best shelter. Fallout will be on its way down at this point. Post-detonation. You may have anywhere from 10 to 30 minutes before fallout arrives post-blast. Be inside before it arrives. This alone will save you from the worst effects of radioactive fallout, which will lose potency as days pass. You should be prepared to stay inside no less than 24 hours and preferably 72 hours. If you were caught outside when the fallout arrives, your clothing and all exposed skin or hair will be contaminated, and until you remove it, you will be tracking deadly radiation everywhere. You should strip and discard any clothing exposed to fallout. Do this in an exterior room or antechamber of the building so you do not bring any fallout with you to the safest area. If you must move throughout fallout or other irradiated areas, do so as quickly as possible, as every moment you are exposed to radiation is injurious, and even brief exposure to extremely hot material can make you very sick or kill you. Once inside an appropriate structure, you must take these few minutes to make the dwelling as impermeable to outside air as possible. Close and lock all doors and windows. Close the chimney damper if there is one. Shut off all air conditioners, heat pumps, and furnaces. Any drafty doorways or windows should be sealed if possible. Remember, fallout can be as fine as dust or ash, and you must take all precaution to keep it out of your building, off your body, and away from you. If exposed, take a shower or wash with soap or shampoo and water to decontaminate your body. If that is unavailable, use wipes or washcloths to cleanse any exposed parts of your hair or skin. Pets that were exposed should be gently brushed, then bathed with soap and water in the same manner. Do not use hair conditioner. The nature of the conditioner can bind radioactive fallout to hair. If you are dealing with a dirty bomb and survive the explosion, you should follow the decontamination protocol above as soon as you have reached a safe distance from the site and any possible follow-on explosions. The principal threat from a dirty bomb is the bomb itself, not its radioactive material. So staying safe while sustaining. As soon as you can, utilize a crank or battery-powered radio to tune in to public notification frequencies. Listen for broadcast instructions on evacuation procedures and routes. Note again that the worst threat from fallout will be in the 24 hours following the detonation. When selecting food, water, and medication for consumption, any source that were inside a building away from fallout or brought inside a safe location before fallout arrived should be safe to consume. Do not eat or drink from any sealed containers exposed to fallout or from any source that may have been exposed to fallout somewhere in the distribution system. Ration safe food and water to ensure you can endure in place while sheltering. If you have the opportunity to help someone else by letting them into your shelter, you may choose to do so, but you must assume they have been contaminated by fallout. Anyone that is showing symptoms like nausea or vomiting, burns, seizures, tremors, or lethargy may have been exposed to strong radiation in a short period of time and suffering from acute radiation sickness or ARS. Follow the decontamination procedures listed above and understand that some risks must remain as they could be irradiated themselves. This is something you must consider before the time comes. When the time comes to evacuate, follow instructions from nuclear response agencies and personnel closely. A nuclear detonation is one of the most destructive events imaginable and will doubtlessly cause many deaths and widespread devastation, but it is survivable if you take the appropriate action before, during, and after the strike. Do not let fear or awe keep you from taking sensible, achievable steps to survive and prevail after a nuclear strike. Time spent thinking about a solution now will save precious seconds and prevent panic prior to the event. All right, there's a couple of links here as far as references that you might be interested in. And definitely you want to have some, I know that they didn't talk about materials, but maybe some pretty thick plastic, like 4 mil, that you can buy like at Home Depot. You can buy the rolls of that. And duct tape, where you can duct tape windows and things closed, maybe your doorways and stuff like that. If you need to cordon off certain areas, you can have that material available. And I just think those plastic rolls are just good to have regardless. There's a lot that you can do with them. But, if that's something that you're interested in as far as nuclear preparedness, radiation preparedness and stuff like that, then you should have some of those rolls and duct tape ready to go into seal off rooms and stuff like that. You want to be careful not sealing it off too well, because, or not being in such a small area where you lose oxygen. I mean, that's possible as well. I know I've read plenty of articles on, that advice as well. So again, guys, that's over at modernsurvivalonline.com. Like always, I'm going to link to it in the show notes if you want to go and click on some of the links and read this a little bit more carefully. All right, our next article is 5 discreet weapons you can carry almost anywhere. And usually on Friday, I do share an article from the archives. This one comes to us from graywolfsurvival.com. And I know that this was a popular article when I first posted it on Prepper website, and I think it's a popular article as well. There's places that we go that we can't carry firearms, that we can't have the weapons that we normally want to keep. So what could you use in place of that? What can you use? And maybe it would be something that wouldn't draw attention to you, that it wouldn't look like a weapon, but you could use it if you needed to. And this is what this article is going to talk about. So I think it's valuable for a lot of us, because there are times where we do go into places where we can't carry a weapon to defend ourselves if we needed to. So let's read this one and see what Grey Wolf has for us in this article. Let's face it. It would be nice to be able to carry a concealed firearm with you wherever you go to be able to protect yourself and your family from any of the millions of crazy people in the world who don't have your best interest in mind. Unfortunately, that's not always possible. Some governments have decided that it is up to only a chosen few to be able to do that, and if you're not lucky enough to be one of the chosen few, you need to hope that you happen to have one in the room if something happens, and hope they can take care of it on their own. As they say, when seconds count, cops are just minutes away. Luckily, there are weapons that you can carry pretty much anywhere into pretty much any establishment. These weapons also don't draw attention to yourself, so even though they're out in the open, they're effectively concealed. Last thing you want is to be the first target when someone decides to attack a room. I get asked a lot of self-protection questions on Grey Wolf survival, but this particular one keeps coming up, so I figured I'd sit down and write some ideas up. Just keep in mind that these are just 5 ideas, but they should spur your imagination to figure out something that would work better for you and where you're going. I've done a lot of threat vulnerability assessment for different embassies and commands around the world. Part of that testing involves penetration testing and evaluation. I've learned to look for things that are allowed into areas that most people wouldn't consider. As such, this article should be a wake-up call for things you should keep an eye out for, as well as give you ideas of how you can carry something to protect yourself and your family while grocery shopping in places like DC and New York City that have ridiculously restrictive weapons laws until you find a better place to live. What I tried to do is come up with 5 things that you could carry around in your hand or within easy reach in your pocket that could be used as an effective weapon if you took some time to learn how to use them and hopefully actually took lessons from an expert or at least done some studying and practicing on. Check out something like Street Survival Guide, Self-Defense, Awareness, Avoidance, and Fighting Techniques that gives you some street knowledge in addition to learning the moves. The best fighting system that I know of that will help you in a real-life scenario is Krav Maga. I've also tried to find 5 that would be the least likely to draw suspicion by someone carrying them. Some things that people sometimes carry as improvised weapons, like a baseball bat, screwdriver, or a keyring kubaton, will still be confiscated if those in power deem them as weapons. I've also purposely left off things that hide weapons such as cane with a hidden sword or lipstick with a hidden stun gun, because carrying those into places where you're not allowed to have a weapon can get you into a lot of trouble. I used to carry a T-handle, swivel, spark plug wrench when I rode my Harley to seedy biker joints in the past, but it was only as discreet as you could fool someone into thinking it was for wrenching. So 1, a newspaper or magazine. This is probably the most inconspicuous weapon of the group, but with some training, it can be extremely effective. It's an improvised weapon that's been taught to special forces and intelligence operatives for generations. Colloquially used as a weapon, a lot of people refer to it as a Millwall brick. The key is rolling it up tight and holding it in the right spot. If you roll it towards the fold, you won't have all the pages layered out alongside it, so it'll hold up better, like I have in the picture above. You can also pre-roll it and keep it tight with rubber bands too, which would make it very effective, but now you're starting to lose the inconspicuousness of it. Here's a quick video that shows you just how easily it can be used. And so here is a video, and definitely you might want to check that one out. 2 is a flashlight. They make a lot of flashlights like the Surefire 6PX Defender now that have a strike bezel in the front that allows you to dig into an opponent while striking them. You can see it in the front of this image. As you can see, that would probably hurt if you got hit by it. The problem is that will also draw attention to you, and some places don't allow them because they consider them weapons, and rightly so. There is no other use for that tip than as a weapon. The truth is, however, you don't need that tip. Any flashlight of the right size can be used just as effectively without it. Just as with the newspaper, it's all about where you strike. Some of them have a mode where you can disorient an attacker with a bunch of flashing, but it's not really effective the way you may think. First, unless you're trained yourself to quickly find that mode, it'll be too late to use it. Second, it doesn't really disorient someone in the general sense. What it does is make it harder for them to identify exactly where you're standing in order to get a good shot at you while you line up your sights. The best ones to get will be ones that will extend out both ends of your hand while holding it so you can strike from either direction, but will also fit in your pocket and can be easily pulled out when you need it. A heavier flashlight will also strike harder. You don't have to get all fancy with the flashlight. You can use as a weapon. 3 is a cane or umbrella. A cane or umbrella is probably the most effective weapon on this list. It can give you more reach, can hit harder, and can give you more leverage than anything else listed. It also is very easy to find a qualified instructor who can teach you how to use it very well. Most umbrellas are terrible weapons. They break easily and have a tendency to pop open if you shuffle them around too much. There are exceptions, though. The U115 is just one example of an umbrella that you can use to defend yourself effectively, but won't be typically seen as any kind of a weapon. It's built very tough and it's discreet. The problem with umbrellas, though, is if it's not raining or about to rain, you look a little suspicious carrying it around. A good cane can be used as a weapon extremely well. You just have to pick one that doesn't look like a weapon. The key here is to find one that won't break easily and has a heavy handle on the end. You can get hardwood canes with brass handles fairly inexpensively. Contrary to what you may think, the fancier something like this looks, the less likely it is that it would be confiscated. Nicer things aren't seen as often as being intended for nefarious purposes. Don't go for something that has a skull or a dragon on it. Also, keep in mind that if you have a cane, you should probably have a limp. Just saying. A derby handle, shown below, is a great option for a cane. It's a heavier end than a door handle type of a handle, and with some training, you can use that end to control your opponent or his weapon. The door handle types are easier to handle and carry around and use. However, here's an example of a derby handle. Number 4 is a belt. You don't need to have a hidden knife to use a belt effectively. You do need to find a belt and a pair of pants that will allow you to pull it off quickly without your pants dropping to your ankles in a fight. I use a rigger's belt myself, but that won't look right with some outfits, so you'll have to figure out something that would work. A wide leather belt with a heavy buckle works well. Just watch that the loop near the buckle doesn't catch on the front loop of your pants, causing it to not want to come out. Here's a video I found about using exactly that in a fight. If you haven't had training, don't even attempt this method that requires you to hold it in two hands, though. Just pull it out, quickly wrap it around your hand, then wrist, then hand again, and use it to keep them back or hit them with it. And number 5 is a pin. I personally carry a tactical survival pin a lot of times because it's now part of my personal EDC kit. These are really useful to have, but more likely to be seen as a potential threat than a normal pin will. The fact is, though, just about any pin can be used as a weapon. All you need is to have an inch or so sticking out of your fist as you hold it, and then use it to poke holes in the fleshy part of your attacker. If you've seen The Bourne Supremacy, you may remember the scene where Jason Bourne fought the guy with the pin and jammed it in the old dude's hand. That pin, by the way, was a black rote ring 600 pin with a knurled grip. They don't make them anymore, but they're still around. Here's a quick video to show you some examples. There's another video there. So as you can see, there are several things that you can use to defend yourself against an attacker when you're not able to carry a firearm or a knife. Some of these won't work in all situations, but some of them can be used by just about anyone in just about any situation. Just figure out what you can carry with you that won't draw suspicion and learn how to use it. Now that you know about these things, you can also more easily identify someone who may be a potential threat who is carrying an obvious weapon. All right, guys, so there's a lot of comments here. Like I said, this article is older, and so there's a lot of comments here. So if you're interested in coming and maybe getting some more advice with people dropping some more information in the comments section, you can get that as well. You know, I remember seeing an article, I don't know if I linked to it on Prepper website or not, about different, just regular type pens that were used that could be used as a tactical pen. He's right in the fact that a lot, you know, now like TSA and you go through security checkpoints, they're all up to date on various tactical pens. So it's very possible that they would take those away from you. But if you had a really sturdy pen that you could use, and maybe it's a little longer than normal, you might want to take a look into that, you know, or maybe it comes to a nice point. You might want to, you know, use that. And so, you know, going to maybe like an office supply and just looking around a little bit might help you to find a really nice one that you can use both for, you know, regular writing, but also use for self-defense purposes. But then there's just a lot of other good information here as well. And so that's over at graywolfsurvival.com. A lot of videos, links, and all a bunch of good stuff. So come check this out. And you know, next time you go to a place where you know that you can't conceal carry, or they're going to be checkpoints or whatever, then you might want to consider maybe taking a magazine with you or a pen, and you know, maybe feel a little bit more secure with that. So go check that out again over at Grey Wolf Survival. Well, everyone, that is it for episode 322 and another week of podcast episodes in the books. Hey, thanks so much for hanging out with me this week. I'd like to just thank you. I appreciate all the listeners out there. Hey, don't forget, if you are new or you are not subscribed, you can come over to the Prepper Website Podcast. .com and subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, any other podcast network. We make it very, very easy for you. And that way you never miss another episode of Sweet Prepper Goodness. Hey, and if you haven't left us a review on iTunes, man, I would really appreciate that. That just really helps to get the word out to other people who are looking for a prepper podcast, and you know, a podcast that can help them just, you know, be a little bit more self-reliant and you know, protect themselves out there, kind of like what we read today. And so I really appreciate it when you do an iTunes review, and also spread the message of the podcast out there in social media. We do make it very easy for you over at the website, theprepperwebsitepodcast.com. And take a moment to connect with me. I have a ton of ways to connect in the show notes and also over at theprepperwebsitepodcast.com. And if you're not a member of the Facebook group, I'd love to see you over there as well. Hey guys, I hope you have a great weekend. And don't forget, if you are looking for more preparedness information, you can come over to prepperwebsite.com, where we link to 8 to 12 articles every single day, 24/7, the newest and best preparedness articles out there. And so you'll always find something that'll be very interesting to you and to your preparedness. And with that, choose to live a more self-reliant life. Choose not to be so dependent on the government grid or the grind. Until next week, stay prepped and aware. Peace.